Hi, and welcome to our Doc Industry Podcast, season number 6. Here's your podcast about creative documentary and animated film industry. It's in collaboration with our dear friends, the programmers of Color Collective, What's Up With Dogs, and Talking Shorts. Big shout out to our partners, supporters, and contributors. Please check them out. And hey, good to have you here again. Enjoy the conversation. Here is your Doc Industry Podcast, season number 6.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Sana Yehul. I'm a commissioning editor at Talking Shorts. I'm very pleased to be hosting this podcast and collaborating with Doc Leipzig on it. I'm joined by filmmaker Saleh Kashefi and curator Eitor Augusto. Hi, both. Thank you very much for being here with me. I'd like you both to maybe quickly say a few words about what you do, where you're based, so people get a bit of an idea. Saleh, shall we start with you?
Hey everyone, I'm Saleh. I'm a filmmaker and musician. I work under the name Filmstars, and yes, I make films and music.
Well, I will jump in. Hello everyone, thanks for having me. And I am Eitor Augusto. I'm based in Brazil, I was born in Brazil. I'm a film curator and consultant. I'm a writer and a translator as well. And I bring all those things together because I like to tell people that I work in the intersections. I'm not a peer curator. I'm not a peer professor. I'm not a peer nothing. I work in the intersection. And I think that it's at the intersections that the most interesting things are happening right now. So yeah, that's what I do.
Thank you both. So yeah, we're just as a bit of an intro to today, we're talking sort of about short films, particularly about political films or films that have, you know, genuine dissent and resistance at their core in how they've been produced and why and by whom. I think in our industry, shorts are often seen as maybe like a more immediate way to make political work or as a space for experimentation and radical expression. We can debate how much that's true or not, but I think the intention today is also to raise some thoughts and provocations around how those notions sort of sit in tension with traditional festival exhibition contexts. I think particularly considering things like the Eurocentrism of that industry, you know, that the way that dominates aesthetic standards, and maybe consider things like industry validation, industry responsibilities and failures. Particularly when it comes to work that is made with political or activist intent, I think especially when that comes from more marginalized artists, like those tensions have existed forever. But I think in the current global climate, it feels really important to keep having those conversations and draw in new voices and bring new voices together to talk about it. So in advance of this, I asked that we each send each other one or two short films or videos to kind of suit that framework. Saleh, in your case, we can also touch on some of your own film work. And I think both of you, from what I know of both of you, you have really politically engaged practices that in various ways sort of are confronted with and try to resist those kinds of dominant structures and working. So I'm quite interested in hearing more about those films you chose and why in relation to the context that we just talked about. So Eitor, I was wondering if you could kick this one off.
Yeah, I can. So for all the listeners, I brought two films. First one is called We're All Here, directed by Chica Andrade and Rafael Melim. It's an important background information. Chica is a trans woman. She's the co-director. And then Rafael Melim is a black trans woman. And then Rafael Melim is a white cisgender male. And the second film that I brought is Film or Not Film by Lincoln Pericles, who is a filmmaker, is an indigenous filmmaker. And the reason behind me bringing those two films to the conversation, I'll start with the second one, Film or Not Film, is actually to broaden the understanding of what is a political film. Film or Not Film is a film about who get access to the resources. That's the topic of the film. It's a kind of ironic, kind of a joke-like film that in which artists from the hood, disadvantaged artists, they're part of a ad campaign in order to raise money for the films. And as they do so, they're reflecting on why is it always the same that when we want to access resources to our own films and to tell our own stories, we struggle. But these people from privileged area, they come to our places, they come to our spaces, and they exploit our stories, our narratives, and leave nothing behind. But this film, and the reason behind me bringing this film to the conversation, is it, at least in the Brazilian context, it turns the mirror back to the structure itself. What are we doing? What are we as an ecosystem doing? How have we been tackling or not tackling the fact that resources, money, and access in the Brazilian industry still remain in the same hands? So this film is a type of film that sheds a light on the structure, and we're not so used to that, at least in the Brazilian film industry. We're not so used to looking at the cracks of the engine. So this is one of the reasons why I brought this film. And the first film that I brought, I'm about to wrap up, the We Are All Here, I brought that film because I find it a good, I think it connects pretty well to ongoing conversations in the world, but specifically in Brazil, which is identity politics, but also capitalism. And I think this film is from 2017, but I think it's still important and relevant to when we are talking about our identities. We need to talk about those identities within the framework or within the confines of capitalism, within the confines of colonialism, within the confines of exploitation. And I have a sense that there are, in some conversations, we're losing track of that. So these are the reasons behind me bringing these two films. They are political in different ways. One is more specifically political in the case of We're All Here. And in the case of Film or Not to Film, it is more political in the ways that it highlights systemic lack of access to resources by some communities.
Thank you. And I just want to say, I forgot to say this in the beginning, that like the films that are fully available online, we will include them in the show notes for the podcast. So hopefully everyone can watch at least some of what is being discussed. I also, eight of those films, I mean, I know We Are All Here, but Film or Not Film, have those films had quite a bit of festival play, or do you know what their reception or exhibition contexts have been?
Yeah, in the case of We're All Here, yeah, it had a huge run. It was like one of the most impactful, most circulated films of the season in 2017 and in 2018. And that has to do mostly with where the conversation was. It was a moment in Brazil of racial reckoning. It was a moment of identity reckoning in general. So that film kind of spoke to a broad zeitgeist, I would say. And in the case of Film or Not to Film, the film has just premiered at FIDE Marseille. And I would say that the film has had some yeses and some nos. So I'm quite curious. The film just began its festival run. I'm quite curious to see within a year from now if the film will have played out in other major festivals in Brazil. I have a sense that no. And I hope we can discuss more on that later.
It sort of fits into, I think, what is also currently of interest, but from a lot of programmers, this idea of like collective, collaborative practice. And I wonder if that's where it finds a way in. Anyway, also, I think it's really interesting what you were saying about the Brazilian industry and that resource issue, which I think you can just extrapolate on a global level in the sense that, you know, people will be seeking out, like the Western circuits will be seeking out, you know, global majority films, but then a lot of those films, if they're in less well-funded countries, industries, will have to come to Europe for money. And I think there's a sort of kind of a replication of that dynamic happening globally, I guess. Salih, and we'll come to you. Maybe you can talk a bit about your own work. I got to know you and I was connected with you through How Miserable is the Home of Evil, which I really loved. And, you know, I know you're working on quite different work at the moment, but I was wondering if you could introduce sort of the thing, that film and the work you're currently in process of, because, you know, they're very relevant to this conversation, obviously.
I mean, maybe I better like join the conversation that you were having before and then end it with answering your question.
Sure.
Because, you know, like as a filmmaker from Iran, where in Iran, basically, there is no funding. All cinema is self-funded, except like the propaganda is made by the government. Really, the cinema industry, especially the short film industry, is really always aiming for Western approval somehow. So that's really like by the time that I started to have like festival run, like around 2017 or something, it was like, I think I was like one of the first filmmakers that found out that, oh, you can actually email these festivals and ask for a waiver code. And then I, because in Iran, we don't have a way to submit because of the sanctions, we don't have a way to pay. So I think like around exactly 2017, 2018, a huge wave of like waiver requests to film festivals in the West from Iran was like, there was like thousands of submissions to every film festival from Iran only. Anyway, so just to talk about how this, like the center of the film industry, especially like for the art house cinema, is Europe, and how it really controls the is somehow the front runner of the decision makers of how cinema can evolve as a form somehow, and especially for the global south, I would say. So that's the thing that unfortunately has happened in the Iranian cinema in the past years, that because of a certain kind of films that has been always selected by the film festivals in Europe, by in Iran, somehow the cinema has stopped to really evolve. It has become slow in the creative sense, really. So I really noticed that there are two kinds of barriers that filmmakers from the global south face today. The first one is like a literal barrier, which is like financial and budget related, which is somehow the only answer to it is Europe, except like, of course, like me, make films with your phone, make films for your handicap with no budget and all. But if you want to make it like a little bit of a, I don't know, with a little bit of budget, you need to like find a European co-producer and something. And the second barrier that exists, which is actually a result of the first barrier, is the creative barrier that all the filmmakers from the global south somehow are putting for themselves. That because of the certain kinds of films that they are looking at, I can really only speak about mainly Iranian cinema, because there is this certain kind of expectation from Iranian cinema that it needs to be political, of course, but in a very creative, formal sense, it needs to be like, I mean, most cliche ways, like it needs to be a social melodrama, dialogue-based, digestible for the Western audience. So, okay, we understand there's a story, there's a narrative and all. So we can really clearly see how all of the festival selections from within the past decade have also automatically controlled the production of the films happening in Iran, and also creatively. That is the most sad thing, that how much filmmakers themselves, they put limits on their own creativity. Like never at ever they even think that, oh, I can make a film that it is not realistic. That is the sad thing. Like they are always like thinking in the same formula and the same universe, like limiting their own creativity. So that is, I think, also somehow related to, like, for example, me myself, I have never managed to get any funding for any of my films. I have made all of my films with no budget. But as soon as I make them, of course, festivals would like to show them. But when I apply to fundings, they go like, no, this is not the kind of film we want from Iran. And they give the Iranian film, which is social melodrama, realistic. They are literally for my feature film, which was in development for 5 years. And now is kind of dead, even though it was like in La Résidence Festival de Cannes, Biennale College Cinema, I don't know, like big international co-production. Literally, the Sense Commission in the rejection of the last round said that you cannot talk about these political topics in Iran and at the same time have this genre cinema aesthetic. That literally, this is what they said, that they are looking for like a realistic melodrama that is like, okay, and in the title, they want to mention Tehran or Iran in the title of the film for the French audience. You know, like, so this is also interesting to talk about that because it's been something that I've struggled a lot. So the film that Sana was talking about is a 7-minute short film that I made in my room with my laptop in like a couple of days. It's an archive short film made out of found footage on the internet. It's a film that I really made with even no intention of like, I'm surprised that it was like, it had like a huge festival. So I don't know. I think that just like in the sense of the first barrier that I talk about, the film is even political in the sense the way that it was made. Because right now we are like, whenever we go, like for example, a festival like Cannes, already from 2 years ago, we know what is going to be half of the selection in 2 years, if not more. Already when we know when a film gets like this funding, goes to this lab, goes to this, we already know it's going to. So if there is a film being made outside of this some sort of machine, even in the art house independent cinema, like the making of it is political. I mean, no matter the context, mm-hmm. even if it's whatever. So this film was also really, I think, like made out of this context that no, I can just, okay, you don't give me money, you don't give me the opportunity to make films, so I'm gonna just do it found footage on my laptop. And then and then when you asked about the other projects, I don't know if I should talk about them now, like my two ongoing projects. And
I mean, we can maybe come back to it because I'm kind of interested in just picking up on something you said there with, you know, that, I mean, that tension that you're highlighting and with How Miserable Is the Home of Evil, like that then, you know, that's a film that you're making on no budget in your bedroom. It's a film that I think, you know, as an Iranian filmmaker, I'm sure implies a good amount of risk making that, like it's very subversive. And that then obviously gets, you know, I'll say this, I love that film, but it then gets a lot of sort of validation from that traditional industry, not necessarily acknowledging, or not about acknowledgement, but not necessarily like understanding how that maybe implicates them, you know, showing that kind of work and validating that kind of work. And so I was wondering if like what, like how you engaged with that, like that moment that then was accepted.
Yeah, that's the thing, because, you know, I make a lot of films, and it's always the films that are about Iran, which are the most successful, because as an exiled artist, it seems like I don't even have the right to be artistic. I have to be political first, because that is what is expected of me. I mean, and of course, a film festival will select 1-2 Iranian short films maximum in each selection. So of course, they're going to give it to the film that somehow corresponds to the news flash of that year about Iran. They don't want the Iranian to tell a love story. They don't want an Iranian to tell a coming of age story. They want them to just correspond that, oh yeah, I heard that about Iran. It's happening in Iran. And the Iranian film that we're going to watch is also, and of course, I am being very provocative right now. I'm not denying the fact that it's very important to make this kind of, I am putting my own life at risk because I believe in this kind of cinema, but I'm just trying to, like, as we say, just bring up these questions and these topics, especially not only political sense, in the creative sense, it's something that I always more sign as kind of protesting for. That I think, like, me as an Iranian artist, I always have to, like, for me, this And How Miserable Is the Home of Evil, of course, is a political film. It was made as a political film. But first and foremost, for me, it was artistic research. For me, it was a formal research on image, sound, found footage. For me, it's a first of all piece of art. And then as an Iranian artist, because I also have this responsibility, I have this like urge, and so I have to also somehow talk about some topics. I have the need to talk about, I have the responsibility to talk about certain topics, which automatically also ticks off the possible success for the film. So that is the funny situation that I am in. Like, for example, for me, whenever I start a project, first and foremost, for me, the most important thing is the formal research. In this project, in my next project, I'm gonna try to see how I can illustrate through the audiovisual form the mental states of depression and like illusionary happiness. For example, but I'm not gonna, of course, say this in my dossier when I apply to funds. I have to tell them, no, it's about an Iranian girl who gets arrested by the morality police, and then she goes and kills all of them. That's the story. So, but because that will be what is interesting for them and digestible. But I'm just saying, I have to play this game. I have to play this performance that, oh yeah, I'm making films about Iran, and no, it corresponds to your needs. But at the same, and also it is a responsibility that I am gladly and I am happy to take. But I'm just saying that at the same time is also with this expectation from the industry that it comes.
Yeah, Eitor, I wonder if you have thoughts on that, because obviously you're really like embedded in the Brazilian context, but particularly like with knowledge on Black and Black Brazilian filmmaking. And I imagine there's probably similar conversations in, you know, what is expected of a certain type of filmmaker or type of cinema. And I'm wondering what your experiences are also from a programmer point of view, or how you engage with that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the programmer part of it, because I think this part of the conversation in terms of what the market has appetite for, when we're talking about this thing called market, I think it, at least in the context of this conversation, we have funds and people who give money, but you have people who show films, or institutions and organizations that show films. So as a programmer, also there are like festivals and festivals. And I have a feeling that FilmSaaS is speaking mostly about what we call legacy festivals, those juggernauts, the big festivals. But in terms of the expectations of Black filmmakers and Black Brazilian filmmakers, yeah, that has been a huge issue. It's not an accident that FilmSaaS says all the things that they said. And just today, I opened an online retrospective called Traces of Experimentalism in Black Brazilian Cinema, because it's, again, to stress that Black Brazilian filmmakers, we make first and foremost films, and we are interested in a bunch of things, including conversations about form. For programmers, there has been an ongoing conversation for the last 10 years. In general, Black programmers, they have been absent from those quote-unquote legacy festivals. And up until recently, we were not there. We were not working for these festivals, for the big festivals, for the major festivals in the Brazilian scene. But they began inviting us because the Black films were there. There were good Black films. Black films were not being shown. Problem was raised. What's happening here? Oh, we need Black curators. So pretty much that's what happened in, let's say, 2015, 2016. And we got there. And some of us, including myself, older people, 40 and above, we got there. And as we got there, we realized that it was an ongoing struggle, because we wanted to expand the understanding of what is a Black film. What is a Black film? What Black filmmakers can do? But within those spaces, we always had to navigate. We always had to negotiate between what is expected and how can we stretch those understandings. And I have a feeling, perhaps I am pessimistic, that every time that we step into a space that is a major space or somewhat of a mainstream space, we're going to always have to negotiate. We're going to always have to navigate. And as FilmSaaS pointed out, we're going to have to tell lies in order to make truths. We're going to have to tell lies. So from a programming standpoint, some of the work that I do is working both with Black programmers, but also with white programmers, is to constantly question constantly question our expectations. What constitutes a women-directed film? What constitutes a trans-directed film? What constitutes a Black directed film. I think as programmers, again, I'm talking about the people who work for festivals. I'm not talking about the organizations. If you're going to talk about the organizations, we have to talk about capital. It's a different conversation, or not a different. There's one more layer to that conversation. But if we're talking about people, I think it's our job, Sane, as programmers, to constantly ask ourselves, is my understanding of a certain cinema, a certain cinematography, a certain people, is my understanding limiting? Is my understanding limited? We have a responsibility to continually stretch open and amplify what we understand, in the case of film styles, what we understand as Iranian cinema. And I'm just to wrap it up, I'm talking about programmers, but as a researcher myself, I look into academia and I think, for example, about the way that non-Western cinema is taught in academia. And speaking specifically of Iranian cinema, for example, we have a very strict understanding of what Iranian cinema is or can be. And that trickles down. That trickles down to us, film programmers. When it comes time to program or to look at these films, instead of questioning what we expect of these films, we say, oh, they don't meet the standards. Which standards? I think it's important for us, people working in the film industry, as programmers, as curators, to question who made these standards. What are these standards made of?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And I want to follow up on that. And maybe I'll just quickly flag up the films that I sent both of you to then also move into that. So I signed the petition by Maddie Fleifel, who's a Danish-Palestinian filmmaker. It's a film that had really, really wide festival play when it came out. And then again, it had really wide festival play in the last 2 years, because obviously it's sort of, you know, raising the topic and questions around cultural boycott of Israel. And I think there's a lot of thoughts I have about that in terms of platforming that type of film, but then as an institution or as a programmer, not engaging with what that's actually calling for or what responsibilities are being questioned in that. The other film was How to Order Online by Jules Ramage, which had some festival play, not a huge amount, but I think is a film that I think is sort of, it's documenting, it's a kind of collaborative practice within a prison with prisoners. And Jules, the filmmaker, has a really interesting ethos to that, because they really see them as co-workers in this project. And it's really the long-term collaboration and project that's at the heart of that film is really, to me, more of that project than the film is, if that makes sense. And I think that's an interesting way of producing work and of removing yourself as a filmmaker from work. But I think it's also a, you know, highlighting a subject that requires a very particular type of engagement as an audience member and as a programmer. I think there's a lot we can talk about with that. And I want to bring that into, coming back to some of what you were saying, that, you know, in showing those types of works, I wonder if us as programmers or as institutions forget to an extent what is at the core. And I think, I'm not saying us, I'm saying just as a wide generalization, there's a sort of inflated idea of the importance of what we do as exhibitors in terms of platforming, you know, big P political work, or like what we see as like political work in terms of, you know, like what are the filmmakers' intent behind those works. And Sally, you can come into that afterwards if you want. But, you know, I doubt that the intent behind the work is that it is then only circulated and validated in a fairly elite circuit, where there's then no real impact or solidarity attached to that exhibition. And I think it's a problem that, you know, we're in a very competition-driven, a very underfunded scene, particularly short films. And the idea that then the highest form of success or validation is this approval from these big festivals and from these big institutions. So, like, I'm wondering what it goes missing sort of in that conversation, that I wonder what the gap is between showing work, or even work that's online, you know, work that reaches millions of viewers. It might be a YouTube clip. I think we've seen in the last 2 years, you know, you see a genocide played out. I think people are responding to short form work in this really, you know, it's an activating thing And then there's this idea that we are platforming that work. And I think our intention is, or like there's an, this one meal with this kind of inflated sense of importance. I think we're like, we're imagining that that's what we're contributing to. And I'm not sure if that's what we are contributing to. And I'm not sure if we're actually having the conversation about that really, really big gap. So yeah, I'm wondering if you have thoughts on that, either of you.
Yeah, I do. Not so well elaborated thoughts, because you just touched on a very painful, complicated nerve. Yeah, we do inflate our importance as film festivals, as film organizations, as film programmers. We do think that we inflate the impact of screening a film, I have a feeling. And but you're asking, like, what is lacking there? I would say is lacking flexibility. It's lacking, of course, resources, but flexibility. And what I mean by flexibility is there are films, not just because of what the film is, but what it talks about and the filmmakers involved in making the film, there are films that require a specific situations, creating specific context, and very rarely working for specifically major film festivals, even working with short film and programming short film, there is and there is any room and any flexibility to think thoroughly about each film, how they better connect, how can we weave them together, and how can we create context in order to amplify the work and the impact in reality that a certain film is trying to have. So to me, what lacks is, first, is lacking asking that very question, like, is this enough? Is screening a film as part of a 90-minute program, is this enough? So that the asking the question has been lacking, but also what has been lacking is resources, the funds and that allow people to ask that question and to come up with solutions. So we are lacking also flexibility. I think that we programmers, because it's work, we're working, it's competitive, we're hustling, we're out here hustling, we have to make a living. So we people don't always have the time and the space to question and think about certain things. But as people, like, we're making a living, we're hustling, we don't have always the time and the resources and the space to create these contexts. But also, most importantly, the organizations, it seems like, and I'm going to be very critical right now, it seems that film organizations, they are not always committed to changing reality. They are more committed to the capital enterprise of making a festival. And of course, we live in a capitalistic world. We're always, again, negotiating and navigating that. But I have a feeling that, I have an opinion rather, that organizations and institutions, they have been losing sight of, it's not just about delivering that same old format, that same old way of showing films. It's about trying to have impact in reality. So we, as people, there's only as much as we, as people, as programmers, there's only as much as we can do. Institutions and organizations need to step in and show concern, not only show concern to having impact in real life and questioning if just is just showing the film is enough.
Yeah, and I suppose that's something maybe, and I don't think this applies to everyone in doing this work, but I think that's something maybe not often addressed, is like, in relation to showing political work or pretending to support political causes, it's like the ability of showing meaningful solidarity as an arts worker, as an arts institution, sits in a context of institutions are primarily there to make sure the institution survives. Like, that's their primary cause, right? So I think when that question comes up about, like, what actions are we actually expecting and what is possible, like, that is sort of not something that we're very honest about, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I really agree with all both of you say. And then again, if I just, maybe what I can bring to the table is like my own personal experience, especially within the Iranian cinema, like, is that I remember once in Locarno, 2021, there was an Iranian short film that was like, just incredibly embarrassing. Like, everybody was like talking, like, what is this film doing there? And when I talk with the programmers, which I know from before, they were like, this is like the best film that we found from the region. which I don't believe, first of all. And second, I told her that, okay, if there is not a good film, just don't select. Just don't select it. But somehow there is this, like, exactly what you said, that just like, okay, now we're going to show an Iranian film just so we have a Iranian film. But it's better to, like, show, I don't know, even not show an Iranian film. And that will be even more helpful that next year there's going to be a way stronger films coming from Iran creatively again. That, oh, the Iranian filmmaker go like, okay, it didn't work this year. We didn't have any film in the major festivals. So maybe they're looking for something else. I mean, even if they're, that's the way they think. And then maybe they try to, like, somehow don't feed again to the same formula, creative formula that they're looking for. But unfortunately, it's always working like that. And like, the biggest example for Iranian cinema is Jafar Panahi. He was like the, I think, like, who has got to a point that no matter, it's funny because I met him like 2 or 3 months ago and I asked him these questions and unfortunately he had no interest of answering them to me. But maybe, I mean, but I don't know. I think these are like very important questions to ask as an artist. But I asked him, like, right now, no matter whatever film you make, it's going to be successful. Even if you just film your, like, wall, literally his film, This Is Not a Film, or whatever, like, it's going to either go to Berlin, Cannes, Venice, for sure. So when you get to that point, I'm talking about the creative sense of it. How does it feel as an artist? Like, are you going to try to, like, again, just like make a film for the sake of it? And for sure, because I am in that situation, for sure it's going to be successful. And for sure, because of, like, newsflash, they're going to give the award to me. Like, instead of, like, unfortunately, nobody, I mean, I haven't seen the new film of Jafar Panahi, but I don't even know what it's about. Because always in the newsflash, in the headlines, they say, like, present Iranian filmmaker awarded Palme d'Or. Nobody says, what is the film about? What is the film? The only thing that they care about is, like, as an Iranian artist, I was talking with Carlo Shatrian once, I was saying, it feels like nobody cares about, like, my artistic work, my artistic research. They care of, like, how many years have I been in prison or how many times I have been arrested. And then they're going to, like, care enough to show it to me. So again, like, I mean, and I totally am, I have high respect for Jafar Panahi and I'm very happy that he makes films. But I'm saying the responsibility of the festival also is that, like, they have responsibility again for cinema as a form and for the evolution of it. So the moment that they give the Golden Bear, Golden Lion, Palme d'Or to Jafar Panahi, it is automatically affecting the whole cinema of the region, if not the whole world, creatively for decades to come. So that is also a question. Like, of course, it is, like, super valuable that Jafar Panahi is making films, but, like, in a sense, like, are we awarding him because of the film or are we awarding him because of, like, the story around it? That is also.
And to add up, or are we awarding him to clear up our consciousness?
Exactly. Yeah, the white guilt. Like, Juliette Binoche was the head of jury at Cannes. She was rejecting to answer questions about Palestine or anything. But then she's like a huge supporter of the woman life freedom movement in Iran. So that is the funny thing. It's like, kind of like, okay, let's give it to an Iranian film, but let's not talk about Palestine. And it's good. And Iran has been always that kind of like a choice somehow that, okay, when we give it to Iranian film, the award, we're kind of like good. We're kind of like, yeah, our consciousness is like cleared off.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, I've thought about this a lot in, you know, like, and seeing it evolve, I guess, in the time that I've been working in this industry. Where I'm not entirely opposed to, like, awards going, if someone's giving an award for that to be somewhat politically motivated or trying to raise visibility or awareness. I think that is in principle fine as long as it's also a good film. but I think the problem is that it doesn't actually, it never feels like that is really the purpose. It never feels like it's an actual contribution to that cause. It feels like feather in a hat, you know? I mean, it comes back to like, why would you put work like this that is, I would hope not, you know, political work, at least like I would hope is not made with the intent of like winning the Palme d'Or. Like, why are we putting that all constantly in these competitive contexts? Like, it's hard enough to get into a festival, you know? Like, it's sort of interesting to me that that's still what we're holding on to, even, and we're all, everyone's applauding these films winning and being selected and whatnot. And I'm like, why are we then not, if that's so important to us, which seemingly it is, based on external responses, like, why is then not the primary function of these platforms to actually have like substantial discourse, to put dialogue between these films, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much that could be done if you actually want to use those platforms. And then it seems like this award is sort of the be all and end all of the action, which, yeah.
I also totally, I mean, I mean, if I'm ever in the jury, I'm always trying to give the award to like a film that is politically relevant and important. But that, oh, again, for me personally, that's always in the second importance. First importance, maybe I sound a bit too romantic, but first importance for me is like cinema and art itself, which is automatically related to politics. Like, mm-hmm. it's impossible to make a good piece of art and for it not to be political. I mean, it's just impossible. Mm-hmm. So I totally also agree with you, and I totally see the importance, because there is no such thing as best film, best director or whatever. So the only point of that actually would be at kind of like somehow putting a spotlight on it. But as you totally say, is really like some sort of passive gesture that, and so much more can be done if really we want to do.
Saleh, I was wondering if you may want to, because I think I didn't let you finish that earlier on, but quickly sort of talk about what you're working on now, because there's something interesting there as well, right? Where you sort of, I don't know if you can talk about it.
So yeah, that's a funny thing that I would like to talk about, like my recent projects, because it's very much, I think this whole story is somehow a good story to bring up, especially in the conversations that I have at the film industry. So I moved in Europe about 4.5 years ago, knowing that I'm not going to go back. And since these 4 years, I've been really trying to like establish myself here and somehow fulfill my basic needs, of course, like the bank account and health insurance, and I have a lot of health stuff, you know? And at the same time try to get established here as a filmmaker and try to make films here. But unfortunately, again, like I said, in 4.5 years, and I came really in like the proper way, like with proper invitations and like proper contacts, and I had really like a proper resume, but I have failed to ever get funding for any of my projects, even though I have applied many times. So 3 years ago, I'm super thankful that I was like somehow invited to do a master program in Switzerland, even though I don't have a bachelor degree. And I accepted it because I learned that they give 15,000 francs, but finally they end up giving 20,000 francs to their students for their diploma film as a budget. And that sounded to me like a great deal. Okay, I'm going to make a film. I already have my projects, and I'm going to get support. Well, anyway, I get in the school. Of course, the system is way more complicated than it looks. And unfortunately, it's very much like of a machine. And finally, I submit. I apply with my feature film project, and I develop it a year and a half. I shoot the feature film, and then I had to make a short film just to present to them as my diploma film. I'm just telling this story because it's a very interesting story of how an exiled artist has no choice and just trying to like use the privilege of a normal Swiss school. Of course, it's like a big school in Switzerland, but it's just like all of my classmates, they were just like kids from the neighborhood, you know. They were just like, oh, it's cool to do this program. But me, I come all this journey, all this problem, all this hassle with the project. And then finally, I have to like, okay, I'm going to represent this. So you let me graduate. I'm not going to sue me. And now I have the feature film. A year and a half later, and the post-production is just now being finished, and I represented at the post-production showcase in Armenia like 3 months ago, and it was so funny just to be there with this film when all the other projects that were showing their budget was like minimum 500,000, 1 million, 2 million euro, and me, I was there with this 20,000 euro film that I made, and I don't know, it just, I think, tells a lot about what it is to be an exile artist. And it's not only me. I know artists from Syria, from Palestine, who are already established. They have already way more resume than other people who are getting the fundings in Europe. But unfortunately, they are forced to do a master program, a bachelor program or whatever, first to get a permit, and second, to get a budget to make films. So anyway, it's funny, and now I'm enrolling in another program just so I can make films, because that seems to be the only way for me to be able to keep making films, to use the little budget that they give to the students here in Europe, so I will be possible to make films here.
Eitor, I was wondering, sort of tying into that, I guess, because I think Salah sort of talked about, I guess, how they're like trying to, you know, they're trying to, I guess, you know, both within that and resist that structure. And I was wondering, from your position as a programmer and touching on some of those things you were saying earlier, like if, like how you are like navigating that when you're sort of having to work within bigger institutions, or are there sort of, I guess, restrictions you set or like parameters you set for yourself, principles you set for yourself, or are there ways in which you're trying to push back on sort of dominant practices, you think?
That's a great question. And I don't want to play the martyr, like I'm doing everything and I'm a hero. I'm just a worker trying to survive in an industry and trying to find the cracks. So to be completely honest on it, there are moments that I see myself with bigger agency and I'm able to raise my ethical level and question things more structurally. And there are times that I'm just trying to survive this juggernaut that, again, as you put it very properly earlier, is more committed to keeping the institution going rather than doing work to change it. Personally, in my practice, either if I'm doing like a special curatorial project or working as a programmer, as part of a programming team, I'm always mindful of how the films have been made. And not to create some sort of quota, but because I understand that people come to the industry, they come to this game with not only with different backgrounds, but such different and varying conditions. So I'm very mindful of how the film gets to be made, how a film gets to be finished. It's not, yes, there are unspoken pressure, such as certain idea of quality, production values, like all of these things, they are in place, especially when you're working for a bigger festival. And personally speaking, I'm always trying to question again those standards, because for a person to meet a certain standard, one must have access to a certain level of resources. So trying to answer your question is, it depends on the context. And personally speaking, I'm always mindful of how a film gets made. It's not an accident that a film looks, quote unquote, better than the other. To have time to think, to have room to speculate, to have room to experiment is sometimes a privilege. So as a programmer, I am mindful. That's what I can say. I'm mindful of those things. And I try to look at each film individually in order to not repeat systemic oppression and just say, oh, this film is not good enough. Oh, that was not well lit. Oh, I'm so sorry. I wish I could select that film, but that film is below standards. I think that's very passive, right? I cannot, and we cannot win every single war, but at least there are some wars that are worth fighting for, and certain questions are worth asking.
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously both of you are doing a lot of work, and there's a lot of other people doing a lot of great work in that. And I sometimes, I think we talked about this a bit, like with both of you, I think in the sort of preparatory conversations we had, where, you know, this again, coming back to like the dominant, like the Eurocentric part of this, you know, the Eurocentric industry and like the kind of core of that, which to me, it's like you're perceiving or assessing films primarily as art for an art context. And I understand why that's happening. But, you know, when we're talking about political films, it's like, oh, you're also assessing them for as potential tools for action, for impact, you know, and there's a, I think there's a lot required to be able to assess them as such. Obviously, you're very embedded in what you do, Sally, you're as well. Like, you're very embedded in like a very a certain tradition and your own practice. And I think a lot of programmers, and again, Eitor, it's something you hinted on, is, you know, it's very under-resourced. A lot of people are doing a lot of work for very little. I think everyone is tired and exhausted for many reasons. But I still think it's worth flagging up this, that maybe there's a gap in understanding that, you know, when you grow up, and I'm talking particularly growing up like white middle class in Europe or the Western world and doing these jobs, and that's not, I'm not diminishing how difficult and underpaid those jobs are. It's, there's, you know, we people like me, we grow up in a certain context, in a certain political context, with certain like understandings of, very farcical, by the way, but certain baseline understandings of living in a liberal democracy. Like, and, you know, that is sort of falling apart at the seams more and more. But I wonder how much of what you're talking about is also just ultimately a real issue in not being able to understand where some work comes from, like why it is being made, how it is being made, like what people's, you know, like cultural and political context is in making that work. I think there's that, which, and it is hard, like obviously you can, I think there's been a lot more progress in terms of festivals working with voices with actual lived experience or from the right cultural context to program work. But even then, you know, like it's, there is, if I look at the 10 years that I've been working in it, like I would say there's a lot of programmers who just don't, you know, it, and it's impossible. It's also impossible to have that level of knowledge and that amount of knowledge. It's just the problem that with that is that it's coupled to this Eurocentrism, right? It's coupled to this, like, you have the power and you have the dominance in kind of setting an aesthetic standard, but you're unable to really know, like, you're going to platform global majority voices and political work from certain regions in the world, and you're unable to really understand where that comes from, which is also why I think it's so hard for people to, like, put it, like just to assess it as something outside of an arts context, or like as something more than that.
Yeah, to comment on that, like real quick. Yeah, there is, to those people that you're describing pretty well, all of these issues, they're kind of not broad, they're more vague. They're not, there's no materiality to it. But when you come from certain contexts, for example, being a queer Black Brazilian, when I talk about risk to democracy, this is not, it's not a speculative, it's the reality of it. I come from a country that has had very little actual experience with democracy. Most of the time we have coup d'etats, dictatorships running the country. So when I see the Western world realizing that, oh, democracy is in danger, I am like, I have this double consciousness. From one side, I'm like, I already knew this. We've been saying this. We've been knowing this. So there's a different level of urgency and a different level of knowledge. And at the same time, there's like some level of irony on my end and on the end of people like me, which is like, oh, really? You just found out. Oh, you just discovered. Oh, welcome to the jungle. We've been in the jungle for quite some time. So it's like, I am empathetic. But at the same time, I don't want to portray this as if this is in like the Olympic Games and we're all trying to score gold for most oppressed people or most endangered people. But yes, there are layers and layers to it. And when you come from certain territories, for example, coming from Brazilian, and as a Black Brazilian, speaking specifically about democracy. Yeah, I got some knowledge on that, on the lack of, like, I know that shit. So yes, you're right, and I'm really disappointed at festivals that don't understand and don't see and don't recognize, don't acknowledge whatever it is, whatever may be the case. Don't acknowledge the power and the strength of having people like me, like Saleh, like you, like different people that can not just speak to a certain reality, but have a different sense of urgency and have a different level of sensibility. And I don't mean intellectual sensibility. I mean aesthetic sensibility that is informed by who are you, where you came from. And I'm sorry that festivals don't see the power in it and the strength in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sorry. Go ahead, Sana.
Yeah, that is absolutely true what you say, because like the things that I say, maybe I know some Iranian programmers and they totally agree with me. And they always are aware of this and trying to pay attention to the politics of aesthetics and how to like go against it somehow.
Yes, I think there has been some improvement in what you were just talking about, Etor, but mm-hmm. Power wants to hold power. And I think if the industry would, I mean, you know, aside from a whole abolish traditional institutions and start again kind of utopia, like if we really wanted that change, there are enough people there for it to be able to happen, or for like there to be a significant sort of like shift in that. But it's like, you know, you'll have noticed this a lot, you know, people are being brought in, but there's being brought in, and then there's, you know, having the wider access and having, you know, a wider ability to influence I wonder if what you're saying about, you know, people need to work with the right, we need to work with the right voices. It's a conversation that we've obviously been having for what feels like an eternity now, and not much changes. But but I think that it sort of, that always stops at a certain point, right? Because if that didn't stop at a certain point, then I don't think the structures as they are would be kept in place in this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you just hinted at the resolution, that like if we were to stretch this up until the end, that inevitably that's what would lead to. And speaking personally, I have had experiences that I was brought in a way that it was very considerate, and not just like my voice was heard, but the things, the perspectives that I was bringing in, perspectives that were disruptive, they were welcomed, and we changed the way that we did things. But there were times that definitely I was the definition of the token Negro. I was just there to prove a point. And again, we're all part of this industry. We're all negotiating and navigating something. If you just want to have me as a token Negro, as the philosopher Rihanna would say, bitch, better have my money.
Then one last thing that I would like to add to that again is that, of course, the industry has a responsibility. But I think me, myself, I guess the filmmaker, the artist has even more of a responsibility. So I am more of a critique of artists and filmmakers who are feeding to these expectations, who are following it so shamelessly, and who are just hypocrites, I would say. So I think that is also like where real change actually can happen. Of course, the industry people, programmers can pay attention, but those who make the stuff are actually maybe the ones somehow that could also make the bigger change, I would say. So I think if the Iranian filmmakers, for example, if they really would stop caring that, okay, I want my film to go to Locarno or whatever, and just make a film for their own heart and from I don't know, for just sake of making a film, like a physical need to make it, then it would for sure be good for everyone. So that, I mean, that's what I would like to add to the end of this, that of course the industry should try their best, institutions and all, but I think the maybe a bigger responsibility is the artist and the filmmaker also. Just like stop making the crap they want from you.
And obviously, like there's, it's also like, oh, do you, you know, do you resist that? Do you resist the industry, or do you just choose to address that outside of the industry, right? Mm. And that's what a lot of people do. Obviously, I mean, that's nothing new, but I think I've definitely, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, the last years have broken me, but like, I think I'm definitely, you know, you definitely like notice that both filmmakers, programmers, audiences, like there's a draw to like the kind of non-industry, non-competitive social impact spaces, the community spaces. And that's, I think, a whole other conversation. But I think that probably goes hand in hand somewhat with what you're saying, you know, where this kind of change or action is possible. Yeah, I think we need to wrap up.
Yes.
Again, we weren't here for conclusions. We were just here to talk and raise some thoughts and raise some provocations. But it's been really nice talking to you both. I don't know if either of you have any last comments.
No, because if I comment on something else, I will want this conversation to extend for more half an hour, because all of the points that we brought, very important. Just want to thank for the opportunity. Thanks for having me. Thanks for creating this conversation. And yes, I think to FilmSA's point, all of us, we all have some sort of responsibility and some sort of implication in this. All of us.
Yeah. Yes, same. I thank you also for having me. And yeah, I really hope that this kind of conversation happen more and more regularly, and for them to become just very casual at film festivals, especially, that we should constantly try to critique and take a good look at where we are and see different perspectives, and like, especially programmer and filmmaker talking together. I think it's very important to have this kind of conversations, to have them all the time at every single festival, I think, actually. So yes. Thank you very much for doing this, Sanne. Thank you for the invite. And
yeah,
see
not
you
at all.
Next time.
I agree. And thank you. Yeah, again, thank you both very much. Thank you, obviously, Doc Leipzig, for hosting us in this podcast.